Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, I'm going to try and go over three different projects, essentially. So it'll be a quick summary. Tyler's the most photographed person in Wetlands. His picture has appeared in countless places now. So he's available at the end if you want to get your picture taken next to him. It is pretty amazing how things can catch on like that. I do want to acknowledge Lowell Gentry, Richard Cook, and Tita Lavera, who are co-authors on this and done most of the field sampling. And Tyler, I'll be summarizing some of that work. So I'm going to start. We know everybody here knows about nitrate and all the problems. This is the nitrate challenge. And if anybody has a way of solving this one, this particular field here, this is 3 years, 2012, 13, and 14. Those of you who know about the Midwest, this was a failed seed corn year in 2012 during the drought and not much flow. 13, we had lots of flow, including a tremendous flow in mid-April, and then lower flow in 14. You can see the concentrations in this particular tile were about 15 in 12. They jumped up to 30 to 40 after the drought. Multiply that by the flow, that was 105 kilograms of N per hectare. Anybody beat that? No, I didn't think so. It's the record we've ever seen. I mean, that's higher than anything. Dan, your really high one might have beat that. But that's a real challenge. How do you design something for 105 kilograms? Luckily, that's not typical of most tiles, but in this particular field, that's what we were up against. So you'll see this figure again. So I'm going to talk about three methods. Most of the other, we've already heard presentations on all of these, so I'm not going to really introduce them. I'm going to talk about constructive wetlands. The speaker this morning from Minnesota, I think, who talked about them with the small ones. That's what we work on, not the big Iowa ones, but very small ones at the end of tile lines. I'll talk about those. Of course, the wood chip bioreactors that we've heard much about, and then drainage water management. So our wetlands, we're in some ways unique. We have wetlands that were built in 1994 that we're still studying. Six of them were built back then, three that we've used intensively for study. This is the area where this is when they were being built. That's a little island. This bigger one here was 0.6 hectares. The smaller one over here was 0.3. This one wasn't really disturbed, and there was a berm built. This one had strips cut in it. They don't look quite the same now, more than 20 years later. That's what they looked like full back in the mid-90s along the Amber River. So all this is in east central Illinois, very poorly drained soils. This is one of the wetlands today. A lot of woody vegetation has come up around them, but they're still operating. The good thing about these wetlands, there's been no management on them. They're still functioning 21 years now and counting. Here's another picture of the some of the area. This is one of the smaller pools. This is not when it's full. That's the island back here that you could see in the aerial photo. When this is full, all of this is underwater. Originally, there were a very diverse wetland plant community in here. Now it's just reed canary grass. I mean, it's pretty dominant, but there's a lot of biomass in these. There's another famous picture. Tyler did greenhouse gas emissions. Again, that's not the wetland. That's just a small pool in the wetland. Don't be confused and think that's the whole thing. It's that wetland is 0.6 hectares in size. I'm going to summarize the results in one slide. This one is hydraulic loading. So if you take the flow in cubic meters divided by the area of the wetland, you get meters per year of water that have come in. And nitrate removal has been, to put it on sort of like the grams or cubic meter per day in the wood chip, we've been putting things on a kilogram of N per hectare of wetland. So that's per hectare of wetland per year removal. This is for two wetlands that we call A and B, and the blue dots are our original data in the mid-90s. And then Tyler came, and we got 2 points at the bottom, and he got the 2 points at the top. So he got high flow and low flow, and we've since added 4 more wetland years, 14 and 15, that are all at the low end. So we've now got the low end really well. It'd be nice to have some. But what you see is a pretty nice relationship here, that the more you put in, the more you remove. That means on a percentage basis, on some of those higher loadings, it's actually less, but the wetlands are removing more mass of nitrogen. which is kind of nice. And what we found is that this relationship seems to be the same. The same relationship we had back in the mid-90s is the same relationship we had now. So these wetlands are still working just as well as they were 20 years ago, and there doesn't seem to be anything that needs to be done to them. They just keep on functioning year after year. Tyler did greenhouse gas emissions from these. These are similar to some of the ones Morgan showed. The bottom line here is it's mostly CO2. We found very little nitrous oxide. I mean, there was some, but this on the bottom are the instantaneous measurements, and on the top are cumulative. They're on a CO2 equivalent basis per hectare per year on the top here, wetland A and wetland B on the right. And we have 2 years that this was done, 12 and 13. This paper just came out recently summarizing these data. But the bottom line is very little methane, lots of CO2, and not that much nitrous oxide. These wetlands are pretty anaerobic. They reduce all the nitrate to N2. So in terms of, we step back and say, what determines the effectiveness of wetlands? Number one, hydraulic loading, how much water you put in, how much nitrate, and how long it's there. Nitrate, and these are, and to me, in decreasing order of importance. That's the most important, along with the retention time. And then the nitrate concentration itself. Temperature, of course, matters. And then carbon. I think these soils, a lot of these areas have plenty of carbon. I don't know that carbon's limiting very often. Soils and vegetation don't make that much difference from wetland to wetland. And then the microbial populations, the microbes are there. I think they function just as well. The microbial population was fine in year one and two as it is today. So on average, we remove 50, 60, 70%, depends on the year, of the nitrate with these. There is seepage out of the wetlands, and that's probably about another 6%. In the 2 years that Tyler did these measurements, nitrous oxide was 3 and about 1% of the total nitrate removal. So it was pretty small, really. And so 20 years later, they're still working quite well. Again, these are the small wetlands at the ends of tiles. The limitation is there's cost, and this, the bottom line of actually putting in a wetland. Landscapes, you can't fit them. They don't work everywhere because of the spoils that we often have on the ditches. Flow at high flow in winter and spring is still a limitation to these. And then there's lots of social barriers. We have not, part of our project, this was a USDA NIFA project, we could not convince anybody to put another wetland in. People pointed to these wetlands and say, we don't want anything like that. So, you know, this whole thing that, well, once people see something, they're going to want it. In this case, once they saw something, they didn't want it. So 20 years later, we can't convince anybody to put additional wetlands in. So we put bioreactors everywhere. Bioreactors were an easier sell because obviously they take up less land. This is one of the ones we put in on that tile line that got the 105 kilograms per hectare. This was put in March of 2012. Reasonably big bioreactor draining 15 hectares of land. We also put another one in. This is a floodplain. Lowell's not here, but Lowell tried to convince the guy to put a wetland in. It floods a lot. He did not want a wetland. He wanted a bioreactor. He got a bioreactor. The bioreactor's underwater half the time. So that's been a real limitation, but that's basically all we could get in there. So here's that same figure again for that this one bioreactor. And so now I put in red the bypass flow for this bioreactor, so the water that didn't go through it. And then in red down below here is the nitrate concentration in black and out in red. The first year with low flow, brand new wood chips, did really well. A lot of removal. In year two, when we have all this flow and a lot of bypass, even with bypass flow, but even the flow that went through the bioreactor, we didn't have very much removal, even with that high concentration. A lot of that, I'll explain in a second why, and then not so well in 2014 as well. These don't look that good, but in the scale of things, they're actually pretty typical values when you convert them to a standardized unit. In terms of the overall budget, the top is the total flow in centimeters, and you see the tile flow and the bypass flow. So again, you see a lot of bypass flow in 13. Then the next figure down is the nitrate in and out. So really good. I think it was 82% removal in 2012, maybe 3 or 4% removal, and then 7%, I think, in this last year. And then sulfate in and out is on the bottom figure here. In 12, we ran out of nitrate many times. We had this hydrogen sulfide could about knock you over sometimes walking up to it. In 13 and 14, we never had any hydrogen sulfide. So 12 with low flow, brand new wood chips, that thing was really cranking through the nitrate. One of the limitations we found is tile temperature. As Gary and others have pointed out, it's often very low, and ours doesn't go down to it went down to about 4 degrees in 14. But during a lot of the flow period, it's around 5 degrees. So that's a limitation. By the time we get up close to 20, there's no flow, so the flow stops. So you can see that pattern here, and so these low temperature periods are a real challenge. So one of the things we found is we could find no relationship with temperature in 2012. Well, that's low flow, lots of carbon, things are just flying along. We get into 13, and these are January and February, really high. These are all now on the standardized unit, grams per cubic meter per day. The rates are still pretty high. But by the time we start really pushing some water through and it's stabilized, we start to get relationship with temperature. And in 14, this is the average monthly rates here of temperature and removal, and it's really nice. So really showing temperature, once you've gotten through the initial flushing period, that temperature really explained things pretty well in terms of removal. These rates are low, but not really low. They're pretty typical of what a lot of people publish for bioreactors. I think one of the challenges here is we got to be careful of first year data or until things really kind of stabilize. So the efficiency was low on a percent basis, but it was pretty good on a grams per cubic meter per day. This bioreactor was just simply overwhelmed. I think anybody's bioreactor would have been with this amount of nitrate. Really not that. We looked at nitrous oxide, we found very little. And Richard Cook did some computations and said this bioreactor would have been 9 times larger to remove half the nitrate. But again, that's with a really high load. The last thing I'll just really touch on fast is a drainage water management, which we've heard about. This has been a no-till field for a long time. We had 2 fields, south tile, north tile. You can see the sizes there. We tried everything with these. 1 year we blocked one tile, next year we blocked the other tile, the third year we blocked both tiles. And Lowell's the mastermind behind this blockage. He's standing in the back and he can explain it. There he is showing everybody, yep, there's a board down there. You can raise and lower it. We had a field day at this particular field showing people drainage water management. There's some stories about this and social acceptance as well. You know, we had another field where the guy agreed to do it. We put the structures in. Every time Lowell put the boards in, the guy went out and pulled them out. You know, that's people agree to things, and when it actually comes time to do it, that's another story. I don't have really time to go through the data, but again, we were blocking one tile. What we found is, and this was not a perfect field. We had a hard time finding fields that somebody would cooperate. This is a real farm. And the bottom line is when we blocked the south tile, the water moved to the north tile. We blocked the north tile, the water went to the south tile, and we blocked both tiles, the water stayed put for the most part, but it all came out when we opened the boards. So it really wasn't that successful. We saw very little effect on nitrate concentration that you can see in here, whether we were blocking one or both. I mean, there's a little bit in here, but we don't think that's really meaningful. We had wells out in the field. We had all kinds of data for this. We didn't find much evidence of denitrification in the field. We didn't find, we think some of the water seeped around the structures and under a road. And so when we put it all together, we used some other tiles to kind of predict, since we're blocking both tiles, we don't have a control anymore, what the amount of water would have been. And in 12, you can see we didn't think we did much of anything. That's just blocking one tile. When we blocked both tiles, maybe there was a little bit of water that never came out, but it wasn't really very much. So again, all we did is sort of slosh water around throughout the field. We didn't really do very well at reducing the amount of flow coming out. We didn't see virtually any reductions in nitrate. And I think this points out some of the limitations in retrofitting drainage water management to existing tile systems. So 3 studies. You know, overall, the wetlands in this case work best. I'm not saying that's the thing to do everywhere, but because again, they work, but we don't get very good acceptance. The bioreactor had pretty typical performance, but couldn't handle that large nitrate load. It would have been fascinating to see how well a wetland would have done with that load. I don't know, it's not going to be 80%, but that would have been really interesting. They weren't seed corn on that those fields, and they didn't have that high of a load. The drainage water management didn't work very well in our field. I think social acceptance of all of these methods is really a problem, but in our particular area, the wetlands are a bigger one. Again, the bioreactors, because of their small size and locations, are much more acceptable. And I think, again, each method can reduce nitrate, but all have their limitations. So I'll stop there.
Questions for Mark?
The drainage water management, you're talking about blocking. I don't understand. If you use a control, I don't know what you're at. When you use a control, you should be better because water control in there, when you don't need to stay there, you don't have to release it. So why are you talking about blocking?
Well, not blocking, raising the board.
Well, you're still raising
the board. Yeah, we're not blocking the tile. I use that word. That's probably not a good word.
What is the tile depth? The actual tile depth?
Oh, those tiles range from 1 to 1.5 meters.
So you control the one
level? I'm going to tell them to turn the low there. We just brought it up, Hal. We tried lots of different levels. This was done in really, we were actually really trying experimentally to try lots of things. So sometimes we raised it to just maybe a foot below the soil surface. Other times we raised it less. We were trying lots of different things and watching the response of both of the wells in the field and the other.
Well, how long have you said control for how long?
Oh, weeks to months. Sometimes one period was 3 months.
1 year was 110.
Because in our case in Ontario, even the winter time, you only need a 5 centimeter foot in there, which is a piece of nature up to 25-30% reduction. Because the continuous flow, you're talking about 6 months control. Now, of course, you cannot put that high. When you put that high, our problem is our tie at 70 centimeters depth. We're afraid of frozen, so we do not. But if your tile is very deep, you control it. Normally, when you control it, your flow is continuous, just reduced. Four time concentration, so that's a lot of.
Well, we could stop. We could pretty much stop the flow by raising the boards.
Well, yeah. But
because the water was going over to the other tile system.
But yeah, that's why maybe instead of that much, if you don't control that much.
Yeah, but then we wouldn't be holding much water back in this particular field. We didn't hold that much water back to start with.
In your wetland studies, does that nitrate removal include bedrooms over the wintertime?
Yes. Yeah, those depends on the year, but sometimes the flow starts in the 1 year, like 12 started in late January. Other years, it's more February, March. But yes, we include the whole year. Yes. Satish?
Mark, on 2012 in the bioreactor, you didn't have very much loss. And then in 2013, you had quite a bit, and then 2014, about. Looks like if you average over a 3 year period, there's not much change. It's going to come out because 2012 came over in 2013.
Well, it didn't come out in the bioreactor. I don't think it's right to characterize as come out. It just didn't. It removed. In 12, with very little in, it denitrified a large percentage of it. Right, that's gone. It's not like it came out in 13. It's just in 13 we had a really high concentration and it didn't do very much to it. Right, it just didn't. But on a grams per cubic meter per day basis, it's not out of the range. I did some calculations. If we had put 10 milligrams per liter in, it would have been a removal of 20 or 30%. That's why the percent's misleading. That's why we've all been going to the grams per cubic meter per day. Because the percent can be misleading in terms of how well it's working. Again, that was a huge. It was 2,000 kilograms that came into that wetland, or into that bioreactor in 13. Yeah, Gary.
What was the range of HRTs in the bioreactor?
They were variable. This is the hydraulic residence times in the bioreactors varied from just sometimes just 3 or 4 hours. It was short to very long. We didn't find very good relationship. We did find a relationship in 12. And it was the opposite of what you would expect. The shorter the hydraulic retention time, the greater the grams per cubic meter per day removal. And that's because nitrate was limiting. And so the more you put into it, the more it removed. But the other years, it wasn't related. We had these confounding effects of the age of the wood chips and the temperature. I think hydraulic residence time, it was really hard to figure something out with that. Yeah. Good question. They do. They have an outlet. They do discharge into a river. We had somebody who did methylmercury years ago on the original measurement, found very little. We don't get sulfate removal in those wetlands. We've never detected hydrogen sulfide. When we've done sulfate input output budgets in the wetlands, they're the same. So I don't think they get anaerobic enough to generate, at least these kind of constructed wetlands, they don't get anaerobic enough to generate methylmercury.
Has anybody looked at the denitrifiers relay on the substrate from the water or from the wood chip?
No, we haven't done any of the microbial population kind of stuff.
Yeah, because this can be leading to what capacity of how sustainable of the bioreactor.
Well, I don't know that I'm worried that much about the microbes in the bioreactor. I mean, I think the big problem we've had is the wood chips we've had really slumping of these. We've had to add wood chips, we're coming up on the second time in 4 years now. We've had plugging, we've had clogging problems. We've had all kinds of, I'll be honest, we've had lots of problems. Maybe we're not very good at it compared to everybody else, but we've had problems with this one bioreactor. The other bioreactor is underwater half the time, so we can't monitor it. And we have a third one that works pretty well, really, I guess, right?
Smaller
area, drainage area.
So what's your recommendation for a bioreactor?
Whether what? The other people have better luck with them. There takes a lot of wood chips, I'll say that.
Excellent. Great. Thanks very much, Mark.